Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
John Canzano.
He's good. He's good. He says his opinion and it's usually right on, I think.
Love him.
That guy's awesome, man. Absolutely love him.
He's dead sexy.
Best radio journalist there is around. Tells it like it is. And he's just right on point. He's sharp, man. Love John Canzano.
Bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
Hate him.
Not a big fan.
Hate him. Too opinionated.
You don't want to give nobody a second chance.
Trump. Most of his opinions I don't really agree with.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
Love to hate him.
Sometimes I think he's all right, and sometimes I think he's a lousy writer.
I'll read his column, but I am not a fan of John Canzano.
Bald-faced truth teller.
I really don't like John Canzano.
Who is he to judge?
I like that he's controversial, I guess.
Pretty good. He's not afraid to call people on their crap.
You love him or you hate him.
It's a love-hate relationship.
I love John Canzano. He's a cool dude.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
Well, you heard the man. The name of the show is The Bald-Faced Truth. And there's nobody spitting more truth right now than Richard Sherman, corner with the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, I have to be honest, I didn't always like Richard Sherman. I thought, oh, he's a showboat. Oh, he's a loudmouth. Oh, he's not a great teammate. He's distracting from his team's mission. What are you saying, Richard Sherman? Oh, it's not all about you. What I've come to learn about Richard Sherman is that he just doesn't have a filter. He spits truth. For example, he was talking about Thursday night football, where the Seahawks will take place tomorrow night, and he said this.
What'd you call it? Absolute hoop fest?
Poop fest.
Oh, poop fest. Thank you.
That's terrible. This is, you know, you played, got home. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that, on Monday, and then you got to play again. Congratulations, NFL. You did it again. But they've been doing it all season, so I guess we're the last ones to get the middle finger.
Getting the middle finger. How about when the NFL ratings were down? Richard Sherman, he had his reasons, and he had his explanation.
Because the league isn't fun anymore. You know, every other league, you know, you see the players have a good time. You know, play it's a game. You know, this isn't politics. This isn't justice. This is entertainment. And they're no longer allowing the players to entertain.
He says it's become boring. It's not interesting anymore. And how about the NFL in general? When it comes to players in the league, Richard Sherman spitting truth about the NFL.
Once they don't have to deal with a player, once they don't, you know, a player isn't on their rosters, et cetera, then they don't care. That's the relationship we have with the league. They're going to use us until our time is up, and then they're going to find somebody else.
Or how about Colin Kaepernick talking about issues of race in America? Richard Sherman.
He thinks America is as great a nation as anybody else, you know, or else he wouldn't be living here, I'm guessing. But he also understands the trials and tribulations that he goes through as an African-American male in this country. You know, people say, you know, oh, he has all this money, so he doesn't deal with those problems. Well, you know, all the money in the world can't buy you freedom. You know, can't change your skin color, can't get your family out of that. And not only do you have to deal with it, but your family has to deal with it, your kids have to deal with it. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, how about Richard Sherman on Tom Brady's suspension?
I'm not sure it means much, honestly. You know, I think it's great for him and great for their organization to have him back, obviously. But, you know, it's just guys getting justice, you know, guys not being persecuted for things they didn't do, you know, getting a fair trial of sorts. You know, a lot of times in this league, and it's guilty until proven innocent sometimes. And you know, it's good to see guys, you know, be able to get a fair trial. And unfortunately, it had to go so long, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. And we can go all the way back to the NFL championship game. You remember the NFC championship game where Richard Sherman was going after Michael Crabtree?
Cam Chancellor makes a huge play in this football game. But when it counted at the end, you led the NFL with 8 interceptions, the tip pass at the end, and the interception to seal the deal. How sweet was that?
That's as sweet as it gets, man.
We knew it would come down to us in the back end to win this thing. Our front seven played amazing. Our linebackers played amazing. Our offense did an amazing job. So we knew we'd have to finish this off. I trust my teammates and they trust me. It was a team effort.
Richard Sherman spits truth. That's what I'm saying. So in that vein, I want to encourage you to spit some truth on today's show. I want you to tell me, as Richard Sherman is saying that it's a poop fest, this Thursday night football thing, and Richard Sherman is talking about players, issues. I want you to talk about issues in sports and tell me, what is the one glaring truth that you think is an injustice or a truth that maybe we all know about and nobody's willing to do something about in sports, like Thursday night football, like late kickoffs, like the disparity in market size in the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the in NBA that plays a role in championships. You tell me, what are the things that are unjust or unjust in sports at 417-7575? Spit some truth on the show today. What bugs you about sports? Because Richard Sherman, he says it. When it bothers him, he comes out and he says so. And, you know, when he hits the kicker and Rex Ryan says, hey, he's too good to do that. Or when Richard Sherman comes out and says he's asked about Roger Goodell, he tells what he thinks about Roger Goodell.
He hasn't done a great job, and it's obvious. So, you know, for us to say he hasn't done a great job, it's kind of just, you know, beating a dead horse, honestly.
The NFL uses its players. The players don't have reason to trust the NFL. The Thursday night games are bad. What else do you see across sports, in college athletics, in the NBA, in Major League Baseball that bothers you? 417-7575. I want to start with college football, and we're going to have a lot of college football talk on today's show as a signing window is closing when it comes to junior college players. We've got a couple of Beavers who have made it official today who are coming on the show. Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian is going to break down Oregon and Oregon State recruiting-wise today. What kind of day was it for the Beavers? What kind of day was it for the Ducks? And also, we will go to Seattle and Tuscaloosa, Alabama, to talk to the two beat reporters for number 4, Washington, and number 1, Alabama, in this college football playoff as we set that up. But before that, I want you to tell me what's wrong, and I'll start in college football, because I think it's terrible that we have a playoff system that gives us the illusion of closure in a college football season. I think it's awful. And if Richard Sherman were going to weigh in on college football, I would expect him to say it's a poop fest when we have 4 teams, including Washington, Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama, that really are just kind of the best 4 teams in America, and one of them will be crowned national champion. But we've got some teams on the outside looking in, like USC and Penn State in particular, that I think might be the best team in America. They might be our national champion, and they're not included in the tournament. So there's something wrong with the college football playoff, that it only includes 4 teams, and that a college football playoff selection committee that is their so-called mission is to give us a true champion and the best 4 teams in America, that committee's failing because there are teams, I think, at 5, 6, 7 that are arguably better than the teams that are in 1, 2, 3, 4. You tell me what bothers you. Spit some truth at 417-7575. I'm going to ask Kiki this. I'm going to ask Gliss this. I'll ask Kellen this, but I want you to weigh in as well. What about you, Kiki? What bothers you?
Well,
what's a poop fest?
Well, I think the Huskies' schedule was just full of cupcakes, so I just think there's some injustice there for sure. So I think you have to take into consideration strength of schedule, and that clearly didn't happen with the Huskies.
Bad schedule,
yeah,
probably the worst.
That's just
worst non-conference schedule of anybody in this playoff.
Hands down.
Certainly anybody in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And so they win the conference, except they lose the USC, and they go to the playoff.
Yeah, that just doesn't...
That bothers you.
It doesn't smell right to me.
I think, too, that there's a lot of... college football, I think, is ripe for this segment, like for people calling in, taking shots at it. So is the NBA. So is the NFL, frankly. But I think one of the problems I have, too, is that we are combining some conferences that play 9 conference games against ones that play 8. And the strength of schedule outside of that conference thing is, you know, there's such an imbalance anyway. Like, people at Washington will go, hey, we can only play the schedule that was scheduled for us.
Right.
Don't blame us.
Right.
We might be the best 4th team. And I would have put Washington in because I think they deserve it.
I think Penn State should be above Washington. That's just me.
I would like to see Penn State and USC, who are playing in the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I think that game winner might be able to make claim that they should get a shot at whoever. Because, and again, we're in the same position we're in with the BCS back in the day. And that's, and everyone will say, well, it only happens once in a while. It should never happen.
Right.
Never happens.
What's
with
the remedy
football.
To that?
I think you have to expand to eight. But the problem is the TV contracts, and you know the TV world.
No.
TV contract says if they expand, they get to renegotiate the TV deal. So nobody wants to do that because both sides are like, eh, what would happen if we had to renegotiate that, put that on the open market with eight games? But the solution to me is you go to eight. You each of the five major conferences picks how they determine who gets their automatic bid. So they can have a conference championship game if they want. They can just play a regular conference schedule if they want. And then, so those are five automatics. Then the selection committee gets the next three. Like Penn State gets in because they're the conference champion, right?
Okay.
So maybe the at-large is Ohio State in the Big Ten. And maybe even Michigan gets in. Who knows? But, or the conference champion is Washington because they won the conference championship game. And USC gets an at-large berth.
Okay.
Or maybe Western Michigan gets an at-large berth.
Would there be pushback for having extra games?
Is that
spreading the kids too thin?
We're talking about two teams that are going to have to play three games instead of one. Or excuse me, instead of two.
Right, okay.
It's three games instead of two. Two teams are going to have to do that. Everybody else, and then I would make the opening round home games for the top four seeds. So there's some advantage for being a 1-2-3-4.
Exactly, and you should have. You should have. That.
And then, you know, we do it right after the season, too. None of this 2 weeks off thing. Let's go out to the phones. Mark's in Portland, 417-7575. I've got two lines open. Spit some truth about sports. Richard Sherman says it's a poop fest, that they have to play a Thursday night game. I say the college football playoff is a joke. Kiki says Washington's non-conference schedule is a joke. What's a poop fest out there? What bothers you? Mark weighs in. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, with college football, there to this day, there's still nothing real about their champion. You look at USC with Pete Carroll, one of the greatest college dynasties we ever saw, never played the SEC champion for a BCS title, which is absolutely insane. In a playoff format, those two would have met five times to determine championships in his seven-year run. You look at 2011, 2012. Only one conference of the Power Five had a chance to win the national title. SEC owned it in 2011, and Alabama got to play independent Notre Dame in 2012. The whole thing's a sham. It always, you know, really has been. It's favored, you know, towards the East Coast with the BCS. I don't know what the committee is looking at now, but, I mean, you've got to put a conference champion ahead of Penn State should be in ahead of Ohio State. I don't care what you argue about. That makes no sense at all. What I'm hearing from my sources are that Putin is a Ohio State fan, so he's hacked. Yeah, and then they're going to get WikiLeaks involved to go through the BCS because he's also a favorable guy for a 16-team playoff. He wants all 11 conferences in, five at-large bids. No other sport, John, settles it the way that college football does. Every other sport, the division champ, a conference champ, controls their own destiny. In this, you do not do it. And now they're trying to clone people into believing that conference titles don't mean near as much as what we think are the four best teams. Absolutely absurd.
I love it. It's Russian, or it's got WikiLeaks written all over it. Mark has brought the heat there. Spitting some truth. You tell me some truth at 417-7575. Let's go out to Daryl in Portland. That opens the line. Go ahead, Daryl.
Hey, how's it going there, John?
Going all right.
I think what really gets me and what Sherman saying about Thursday nights, just get rid of Thursday nights, man, because, I mean, people are always, you know, they'll be saying, well, they make so much money, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, they're human beings, too. They get aches and pains and beat up and bruises. You know, Thursday nights, get rid of them. College playoffs and all that, if you want to call it playoffs. What upsets me is when they decide to do all this, to me, I thought they should have just did it like the smaller colleges, have 16 teams, you know, and do their thing like that. You know, if you got a problem on how you want to do it, talk to those guys and see how they set it up. You know, if you're not going to do 16, which obviously they're not, then at least eight, because there's so many good college teams out there. You know, even Penn State, as you're saying, with two losses, they should still have a shot.
Yeah.
So that's what just really gets me with these things. And then, you know, they're talking. Everyone's talking about, well, the BCS, this and that, blah, blah. Well, before the BCS, basically, and what's happening now is what people think and how you're being picked. BCS, well, it's computer. Well, you know what? You guys just need to get your act straight and just make it a little bit more fair, because there's so many teams that just get screwed. At least go to 8. I'd like to slap them all for making it all this way.
And I need I need the selection committee there, because I need them to seed the teams. And I'm fine with them seeding the teams. But if you are a conference champion, Penn State, you should be in the playoff. The Power Five conference champions should be in the playoffs. There should be 3 at-large teams, and USC and Penn State would be shoe-ins to get 2 of those right now. And that third one would either be Western Michigan or Michigan, I think. And I think a lot of people pick Michigan. But I also think that it would give us what the end. See, the beauty of March Madness is that this tournament bracket started so long ago that television couldn't screw with it. That's the beauty of it. Now, though, they've gone to 68 because they want play-in games. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, this whole Thursday, Saturday, or Friday, Sunday schedule, you know, just wait till television gets a hold of that and they're playing NCAA tournament games on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I don't like Thursday night football on Thursday night, but if we're going to have it, I think that whoever is participating in that game should be coming off a bye week. So you've had, you know, 10 days off, you know, 11 days off, and now you have another long week in recovery for that. And if I'm the Players Association, I'm fighting like hell for that. Let's go. Gliss, what bugs you? What's on your mind when it comes to spitting truth?
Well, I would agree that Thursday night football is garbage, but what I don't like is back-to-backs in the NBA, and specifically when it's 4 games in 5 nights. I just, I believe they actually tried to reduce it this year.
Yeah, they should reduce it to 0, though.
Yeah, they should reduce it to 0, because it waters down the product and, you know, guys get tired. So I want to see the best product on the floor every night.
That also, you know, you look at that, and people who study such things will tell you there are fewer dunks in those back-to-back games, that the legs aren't there. The shooting percentages are down in the second of a back-to-back by both teams. More turnovers, so it's sloppier basketball. So if you're going to have back-to-backs, why are you not discounting the tickets? Because you're not getting you're not getting a good show.
Right.
You're getting kind of we're going to toss this extra show in.
Right.
Mentality. Chris is in Silverton, 417-7575. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. You know, the Thursday games aren't, you know, extremely entertaining all the time, but what else are you going to watch? I'm not going to watch, you know, Villanova basketball on a Thursday night. I mean,
what did you watch before, though? Because this hasn't always been.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm
you
not
watched,
huge...
you know what you watched is Seinfeld. You watched Cheers. You watched Thursday night.
Grey's Anatomy.
Thursday night was a huge TV night.
Right. Yeah, but still, I mean, if you're a football fan and an NFL fan, I mean, a short week, you're going to get, you know, the product's not going to be as good as a Sunday. But like you said, if they have a bye week coming into it, you know, if it's one game a year per team, I mean, it's not that they're playing every Thursday.
Yeah, but they are playing every Thursday. You know what I mean? Like, I have to watch one game every Thursday. I get what he's saying. Like, okay, it's a small problem. He's saying that's a small problem. And these are all first world problems, okay? This isn't like we're solving hunger or clean water for the world. But if players feel like they're being endangered and the product isn't very good and people aren't watching it, at some point, if you're the NFL, you have to fix that. And if they don't want to – see, I know why they went to Thursday night. They went there because of money. They want games on CBS, NBC, the NFL Network, ESPN. They want everything. So they want to be on all the networks at different times of the week. Fox, they want to be everywhere. So Thursday night was a way to go, hey, there's one more night. And by the way, that's a huge primetime TV night. And it doesn't compete with high school football. And it's wide open for sports to take. And the only real loser is the NBA. Okay. And we'll take some market share from the NBA. I get it. But if you're going to do that, the bye week thing solves it for me. Because, all right, every team gets a bye. You come out of your bye, you play Thursday night game the next
week. Yeah.
It works.
Makes perfect sense.
Michael's in Vancouver. Michael, what's bothering you?
Hey, John, the thing that bothers me about sports is that the NCAA claims to care about the student athletes, and they don't want to overschedule them. So that's another reason why they don't want to go to an 8-team playoff. And I think that's just not true at all. because the NCAA is a multi-billion dollar sports industry, and for them to pretend to care about the student athlete is just, it's just one thing that just really rankles my feathers. And another thing that just gets me going is that Putin and WikiLeaks is keeping Major League Baseball from Portland. My sources tell me Vladimir Putin and WikiLeaks is keeping Major League Baseball out of Portland.
Yeah.
That's my rant for the day. Thank you.
I have heard that. What else is Putin and WikiLeaks doing? You tell me. 417-7575.
You know what else bothers me? And it's a good news, bad news, since we're on the West Coast, is just the inequity in terms of start times for games, whatever sport it is. If it's a 7:30 start here, that's a 10:30 start on the East Coast. During the World Series, all these little kids,
yeah,
you know, moms and dads are fighting because little Steve wants to stay up to watch the Cubs,
but he has to go to bed.
You know,
Steve.
I mean, it's really tough. And I didn't really realize that until I moved to Chicago. I'll never forget the first Sunday I woke up. It's 10 o'clock. I want to watch football. Like, wait, it doesn't start till noon?
Yeah.
It's just, it's tough.
All right, here's what I want you to remember and take out of this segment. The playoff, the college football playoff that, by the way, runs through 2025. That's the soonest it could be changed because this current deal gets torn up if money has to go back if they change it. It was a 12-year deal in its origination, and the total price tag was $5.6 billion. That's $470 million a year. That's why they don't want to go to eight teams.
Wow.
That's it right there. So this is, you know, this is ESPN. This is CBS. This is everybody. And college football playoff people, they're not sharing that money with players. No way. Or no way and no how. All right, we'll talk college football playoff. Adam Jude of the Seattle Times and Cecil Hurt of the Tuscaloosa News, they will battle Alabama against Washington in front of Alabama against Washington. Next.
Everybody, get out on the floor. It can get a little crazy when the kick gets the board.
This is the BFT with John Canzano on 750 and 1029 The Game.
Second down and 10 from the 30. Running will throw it again. This time going down the left sideline. Wide open over there. Ross at the 40, 30. Alone to the sideline. Alone to the end zone. 70-yard touchdown, Washington.
Oh. College football playoff. I think it should be eight teams, but it's four. And we've got Washington and Alabama playing in a semifinal game. Adam Jude of the Seattle Times with us here. We're going to do something really interesting this segment, as Adam Jude of the Seattle Times, who covers Washington football, will weigh in, and then Cecil Hurt, who covers Alabama football for the Tuscaloosa News, will follow him immediately. So if you're looking for Alabama-Washington content, we're rich here. Adam Jude, where are you, man? Where are you?
What's up, JC? I'm just outside a restaurant where I'm having some lunch up here in Seattle.
Sorry to interrupt you, but...
Oh, you're good. How you doing?
The show must go on. I'm doing well. What's it like to have a team in the playoff?
Yeah, it's been a lot of buzz up here. It's been a long time coming for Husky fans, of course. I know a lot of Husky fans there in Portland, but certainly a lot of Oregon fans, too. And I think that was such a seminal moment for this Washington program, going down to Eugene in early October, putting up 70 on the Ducks in Autzen Stadium. I mean, you know, no Pac-12 opponent has ever done that to the Ducks in Autzen Stadium. And I think coming off the big win for Washington against Stanford the week before, I mean, that obviously sent these guys into another trajectory, and here they are. It's been 16 years since this program has been in a major bowl game. And they've been dying for something like this. So as you can imagine, you know, folks up here are pretty excited. It's a long way to Atlanta for that national semifinal, but I'm surprised at the folks I've been hearing from that are going. I think the Huskies are going to be really well represented there.
This appears at face value to be a physical mismatch. What is Washington doing to combat Alabama's physicality?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, I think the Huskies have sort of prided themselves on being the most physical team here the last couple of years in the Pac-12, certainly defensively. that's kind of the brand that they want to be known by. And I think we saw that, in the Pac-12 championship game against Colorado, Jake Browning played his worst game of his career, and yet the Huskies still won, by 30 points in the Pac-12 championship game against a really good Colorado defense. So that, to me, is the question. The most improved unit on this entire Washington team has been their offensive line this year. They haven't seen anything like Alabama. That front seven has NFL players all over the place. I think if you look at NFL mock drafts, I mean, three of those Alabama defenders are supposed to go in the top nine, top 10 picks. I mean, these guys are freaks. They're all five-star, all-American dudes. It's a whole nother level. I mean, Alabama's favored by 17 points. I mean, this could get out of hand. At the same time, that's kind of where Chris Peterson wants things to be. He doesn't love the attention. He wants his guys to kind of embrace that underdog role. And we'll see over these next few weeks. You give Nick Saban a month to prepare, and he's proven he can beat anybody. But Chris Peterson built that reputation at Boise State as well. He's a giant player.
Obviously, Alabama's going to look at the USC-Washington film and go, okay, what did USC do against them? What does Washington do as they go to kind of scout Alabama?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you talk to all the coaches here. You talk to other coaches who have played Alabama. I mean, there's obviously no weaknesses. You don't get to 13-0 by accident. But I think what the Huskies can do, I mean, you look early in the year, a game like, Ole Miss, they gave Alabama their toughest game. They scored, I think, 42, 43 points in that game. And that's, a pretty good Ole Miss offense. They had Chad Kelly was probably the best quarterback in the SEC at the time. But if you're out here in the Pac-12, I mean, it feels like a Chad Kelly is a dime a dozen out here, the Pac-12. So what did Ole Miss do to that Alabama defense to get 40-plus points? And how can the Huskies recreate that? Again, if Jake Browning plays like he did against Colorado, the Huskies have no chance. He's got to be at the top of his game. I thought Jake Browning was really tired by the end of the year. His arm just looked pretty weak. He lost his fastball. He had pitched 200 innings in the season and was running on fumes. And so give him 3 weeks off, and which is what they're doing. I think they're really limiting Jake Browning here in practices in the buildup to the Peach Bowl. I think he'll be refreshed. And again, he has a team defense like Alabama, but I expect Jake Browning to be much better, and they need him to be much better if they're going to hang close at all.
Adam Jude, Seattle Times, covers Washington football. I keep hearing, and we all know Chris Peterson's smart, but I keep hearing things like, hey, if you give Chris Peterson a long time to prepare, look out. What are people talking about when they say that?
Well, it's interesting, the timing of this. It's the 10-year anniversary of that great Fiesta Bowl upset of Oklahoma when Chris Peterson was at Boise State. That was his first year as a head coach there, a young coach. Not a whole lot of people knew about, on the national scene. I don't think a whole lot of people gave Boise State much respect going into that game against Adrian Peterson and that great Oklahoma team at the time. And lo and behold, it turns out to be one of the greatest games in college football history. Tremendous upset. I mean, we can all picture the scenes, Ian Johnson, Statue of Liberty, proposing to his girlfriend in the end zone right after. I mean, it was a classic, all-time classic game. And that's the sort of thing. It's like, well, that's the reputation Chris Peterson has built, and he's continued that, throughout his career at Boise State and now coming to UW too. So, he's the kind of guy where he obviously could have gone to a USC. He could have gone to some of these national high-profile programs at Texas. He had chances over the years, but he's a guy who doesn't really like the limelight. He likes being up here in the Northwest, kind of tucked in the corner where it's hard for the national media to come talk to him. He just doesn't love the attention. So I don't think necessarily on the national scale he has quite the same reputation or same respect maybe he would if he were at a larger market or something like that. But make no mistake, I mean, he's an elite-level coach. I think he's proved that this year. He's got a great coaching staff, particularly on the defensive side. So I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think. I'm not going to predict right now that the Huskies are going to win or pull off a shocking upset, but I think they have the bullets to hang in this thing. I think they're good enough defensively to keep this thing interesting.
Adam Jude, Seattle Times, with us. Jake Browning, I put him on my Heisman ballot, and I put him there because I feel like I have to represent the Pac-12 conference. I thought he was the player in the Pac-12 that had the best chance to get some votes. I voted for him. I put him there. What's the ceiling for this kid? How much better can he get, and how much better did he get at different times of the year in your eyes?
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously terrific. First half of the season, midway through the year, 8 total touchdowns in that game against Oregon. I think he threw 6 touchdown passes against California, again, two of the worst passing second defenses in the Pac-12, and he did what he should do in those games. But he's just so efficient. He's so sharp. I hate to keep kind of dropping cliches, but he has it really put together mentally. It's really rare to see him confused or, you know, not knowing what to expect. I mean, it seems like he diagrams the defense before the defense almost knows what it's going to do. He anticipates so well. He's just so accurate. Even coming in as a true freshman last year, winning the starting job. I mean, I saw the first time he practiced with the Huskies in spring ball. I mean, the way he went through his progressions was so fast, just bang, 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 going through three different reads was unlike anything I'd seen out of a quarterback that young before. So, you know, he doesn't pass the eyeball test necessarily. 6'1", maybe 6'2", 205 pounds. So you don't look at him if you're passing him on the street and think that's an elite-level college quarterback. But he's got it put together everywhere else. He prepares hard. That's kind of his reputation, that he's a film junkie, and he just loves football. He's a gym rat in football. And so, you know, can he get better? You know, it's hard to say. You know, 42 touchdown passes. He's one more to tie the Pac-12 record. He's probably not going to have John Ross next year, their standout wide receiver. So can he put up these ridiculous numbers again? I mean, we'll see. You'd expect him to grow and develop. But, you know, with this offensive line, as improved as it is, with those wide receivers, I think he's reached the ceiling, you know, for this year. But certainly he's got still a lot of room to grow. I don't know if he's a surefire, you know, future first-round NFL pick. But I think people will be surprised. You know, this guy is going to have a chance to have a long NFL career in my mind.
Before I cut you loose, Pete Carroll with the Seahawks had sort of mentioned the idea of Washington playing or scrimmaging the Seahawks to get some physicality test. Is that just a joke or amusing? Or would Chris Peterson put his guys out there for a short scrimmage?
Yeah, it's just kind of a fun little idea, fun joke. Chris Peterson actually is the one who introduced it right after they, you know, got paired up with Alabama. He said, "Hey, the great things, the Seahawks are here in our backyard. Maybe they'll scrimmage us just to get us ready for a test like Alabama." So, you know, NFL rules don't allow it. NCAA rules don't allow something like that. It's a fun idea because the Seahawks are the big thing in town here. And obviously right in the Huskies' backyard, but certainly not going to happen.
Adam Jude, Seattle Times. Thank you, man.
Thanks, John. See you, man.
Great stuff from him. There's the Washington side of this game. Cecil Hurt covers Alabama football for the Tuscaloosa News, joins us now. How are you, sir?
Good, John. How are you?
I'm well. How is Alabama looking at this matchup?
Well, they're certainly looking forward to it. They've been through it before. They've played in every college football playoff game except one. There hadn't been that many, but they've been there. So it's something that they're used to. It's not something that's a first-time experience for them, but they also know that anybody who's in the Final Four, to use the basketball term, is a good team and has to be dealt with accordingly. So there's not any overlooking Washington, or there's not going to be any trash talking. That's just not really the way they operate. So they're looking forward to it, ready to get started preparation tomorrow, and we'll show up in Atlanta.
You've watched this team, and everybody says they're invincible, they're perfect. You've seen them play their best and play their worst this season. What is their worst?
Their worst? They can give up some defensive plays on the back end. Ole Miss played them close. Now, Ole Miss recovered an onside kick late and was able to kind of get back in the game that they were really out of and made it closer at the end than it really was. But, you know, you can find some plays against the secondary with receivers like Washington has. Jalen Hurts is a freshman and does some freshman things sometimes. He doesn't seem to let it rattle him very much. But, you know, he's not the kind of passer that'll go number one overall in the draft. He doesn't have that kind of arm. He can throw it deep, and they've got great weapons to catch it deep. But, you know, he's still really not scraped the surface of what he's going to be. So people try and do some things to confuse him. To what most teams try and do with him is keep him in the pocket, try and make him beat you by throwing the football. And that has worked to some extent for some teams. You know, LSU had them scoreless till the fourth quarter. So again, nobody, you've covered football long enough, nobody's invincible.
at this level of play, and Alabama's not either. But now, with that said, they're pretty good.
Yeah, I'm looking at them, and I'm thinking, all right, I see the spread, I see the physicality, I see what USC did to Washington, and I'm going, okay, Chris Peterson's probably the best shot Washington has of doing something in this game that would surprise Alabama. I have to think that Alabama's looking at that USC-Washington film and going, okay, this is how you solve Washington. What tape, what game does Washington need to be looking at?
I'd probably look at Ole Miss to some extent if it's going to come down to that. If I were Washington, I would not look at the Alabama-USC tape. I don't think that's going to happen very much. I don't think that's going to do anything for anybody's confidence. So, I'd look at Ole Miss a little bit. I'd look at Auburn in the first half. They were able to do some things. Gus is a coach who like Chris Peterson, he'll script some things up, do some different things, give you some different looks, and Washington will be doing it with better offensive skill guys than Auburn had. So I would look at those. But at the end, you're going to have to be, and this is what Alabama, this is what Nick does a great job of. You got to win games the way you win games. You certainly scout. Nick got 300 graduate assistants or, analysts and so forth, and they look at every frame 50 times. But at the end of it, you've got to be who you are. You got to go out, and what Alabama wants to do is beat you on both lines of scrimmage, make you one-dimensional, take something away from you, get ahead of you, and then see if you can come back on that defense, which nobody's been able to do.
Cecil Hurt, Tuscaloosa News, is our guest. The player that makes Alabama go, when you say, hey, this is their MVP for the season, sometimes that guy's not a running back or quarterback, but who is it at Alabama?
Well, I think that Jalen Hurts, the quarterback, is important. But I think the leadership is on the defensive side with Jonathan Allen and Reuben. I'm going to name two.
Yeah,
Jonathan Allen and Reuben Foster. These are guys who are veterans who've kind of been through it. And at the same time, like most of the players at Alabama, they waited their turn. They were behind guys a couple of years ago and have had to sort of work their way into the starting lineup. So they've got that respect going for them. So I think those are the guys that you really look at if you're saying these are the leaders. And Jonathan's probably, I think most people recognize him as probably the best defensive player in college football this year. So that helps when guys at that level are also giving you leadership.
When I looked at statistics, I see Washington's defense against Alabama's offense. And if I'm Washington, I feel like that might be my best matchup. But what is it that Washington has that could really hurt Alabama?
Well, they've got playmakers at wide receiver. They've got a good physical defense, but what you've got to do offensively, what you've got to do defensively against the Alabama offense is find some way that you're not letting them run the ball on you when they want to start running the ball.
Yeah.
Because they've been able to do that to everybody. They don't necessarily come out, line up, and it's not like Stanford. They don't line up in two tight, two fullbacks, and muscle you that way. What Lane Kiffin, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with, what he likes to do is spread people out, get them going vertically, take you into the second half, and then come in with the running game and hammer you and eat the clock and put you away. So they'll do some of both. Like I say, it won't be Stanford-like. It'll be Lane Kiffin-like. Now, where they have a part of that strategy is, they also, the Alabama, this is just philosophically, I'm not talking about trash talking again, but just philosophically, they approach things as if their depth is better than your depth, whoever you are, whatever team you are. And that if they can get you in the second half and you don't have a lead, they'll just crush you. They'll just wear you down.
Lane Kiffin is an interesting topic because, he takes the job at Florida Atlantic. He's obviously a walking headline. What has he really brought to Alabama, and will him taking this job be a distraction at all for the bowl game?
No, I don't think so. They went through the same thing last year with Kirby Smart taking the Georgia job. So they've been through it before. I think that
Lane will attract a lot of attention. He'll get a lot of interviews. He's a great interview, and he'll be doing that before the game. But what he's brought is he's a very good play caller, and he's an outstanding developer of quarterbacks. And they wouldn't be as successful as they are with a true freshman quarterback if that weren't the case. Lane's been to the college football playoff with Alabama 3 years in a row with three different quarterbacks. I don't think you can say anything more about his ability to develop quarterbacks than that.
Yeah.
And they're not for all the talk about, you know, five-star players, and Alabama's got plenty. These aren't necessarily five-star quarterbacks. One of them, the first one, Blake Sims, a converted running back. So he's done it, you know, not necessarily by recruiting the best guy, but by developing guys.
Cecil Hurt, Tuscaloosa News. Yeah, when you look at the ability for Alabama to just regenerate and be a part of this college football playoff year after year after year, is, you know, to me, I look at that and I say, all right, this is a system that was set up to give us the best teams, and Alabama's always there. Why is Alabama always there? What is the secret beyond SEC or beyond Saban, or is it that simple?
Well, first of all, you've got to recruit the best players, and that's not just Alabama. You've seen Ohio State 2 years out of three. You've seen Clemson 2 years out of three. Now go back and correlate that with your recruiting rankings, and those are the same names that you'll see. So there's good talent. Nobody's doing it without good talent. I think where Nick deserves credit is they won it in 2009, 2011, 2012, say, if you remember the Notre Dame game.
Yep.
Where they really were just go out and crush you, just go out and mash you. You know, they just wanted to play pro-style offense and have five big guys on the offensive line and five big guys on the defensive front, and you just couldn't do anything with them. And that's why they had a little bit of trouble with spread teams. You know, the teams that gave them trouble in those years, those championships, were teams that could spread the ball out, quarterbacks that could make plays. So, Nick, in the midst of all that success, instead of saying, you know, I'm going to be stubborn, I'm going to do things the same way I've always done it, and this, I think, is what makes the difference in a good coach and a great coach. Nick says, I'm not going to stand still and just do the same thing every spring for 25 years. I'm not going to have the same team. I'm going to address what gives us a hard time. So they went out and changed the way they recruited defensively. They're faster. They've got more guys that can play multiple positions. Still five-star guys, but just different kind of guys. And when nobody had hiring Lane Kiffin on their radar, you know, he went out, hired Lane Kiffin, and changed what they do offensively from kind of power eye straight ahead, you know, hand the ball to Heisman Trophy running back Mark Ingram or whoever it would be. Now, they had Derrick last year, and you got Derrick Henry, you got to use him.
Yep.
But even then, they were a little more multiple and are much more multiple this year on offense with the dimension of a running quarterback than they have been. And that's because Nick, instead of hiring a guy who would do the same thing that the previous offensive coordinator did, said, I'm going to change. I'm going to do what other people are doing that gives us trouble. And so that's really how they've been able to do it. Certainly nobody's saying it's magic and smoke and mirrors when you've got, you know, six. I saw one draft projection today, and they had six guys in the top 20. You know, it's players, but it's also putting those players in the best position to win, having them prepared, and then, and I think this will happen at Washington eventually, but you've been around. You've seen when USC had it really going, when
yep.
Miami had it really going. The guys you recruit don't come in and cause trouble. You know, they know what to expect. They understand that it might not be you're going to start right away, and you're the only star on the team, and you're the prima donna. They've got plenty of guys. They understand what the system is. They understand what their place in the system is. And so it perpetuates itself to some degree.
Cecil Hurt, you're the best. I appreciate you, man.
Really appreciate it. Hope you get to come to the game. If not, hope to talk to you soon.
You too. There he is. Tuscaloosa News against the Seattle Times. Who you got in this game? Tweet at me, @JohnConzano, BFT.
Something is about to happen. BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, y'all know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
9:45 to go in the fourth. Bolden in motion through the formation. Give it to Nall. Ryan a hole. Dives over the right side. Ryan is in. Touchdown, Beavers, and they regain the lead in the 120th Civil War. 27-24, 9:40 to play.
Big day in college football, especially a big day for Oregon State. And we've got, you know, we like to stay on top of the recruiting news, but Isaiah Hodgins is a Beaver commitment at wide receiver. He is a big-time playmaker. He's the kind of playmaker that Oregon State said it needed from the beginning. They got on him early. They stayed on him. They wanted him. I know that the Beavers coaches were high-fiving and fist-bumping when Isaiah Hodgins said that he wanted to be a part of their program, and he joins us now, making it official today. How'd that go down? How are you, Isaiah?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, it was a long process, and the recruiting process is definitely one that shouldn't be taken lightly. And, you know, it gets you sometimes, especially towards the end of it. But after I decommitted from Washington State, Coach Baldwin and Coach Brennan and Coach Anderson told me they were going to recruit the hell out of me. And so I committed, and they were going to stick with it. And they kept with their word. You know, they came out here and watched me play in one of my games, and you know, they made me feel loved on my visit, and they were always showing support and the home visits and everything. And, you know, they just did a great job recruiting me, and I just decided to take my talents there.
The actual ceremony, did you do something? I mean, I've seen people do big ceremonies, or did you just do it with family and friends?
Are you talking about the signing?
Yeah, the actual signing, yeah.
Yeah, it was just with family and friends at home.
You mentioned that they recruited the hell out of you. What does that mean? Like just showing up, letting you know that you're important to them?
Yeah, just always answering any questions I had. You know, just coming up at games or home visits and always checking up on me, seeing how things are. They're actually interested in me as a person instead of just a recruit and, you know, talk about me and my family and, you know, goals and everything like that. So they just did a great job recruiting me.
What were the factors for you? Like when you start going through this process and, you know, a guy who is in your position's got options.
Definitely early playing time was a big one. And I feel like I could go to Oregon State and make a big impact and help them win a Pac-12 title. Education was good too. When I went there on my visit, we sat down with a lot of the people in charge of the education and my tutors and everything. And we got that straightened out. So my mom liked that part and definitely just where I was comfortable at. And when I took all my visits, I felt the most comfortable at Oregon State. There's just, you kind of have that gut feeling. And, you know, I felt the family atmosphere and bond of the team and the coaches and the fans. And it just felt home for me.
The family atmosphere, I think all programs talk about family, but you got to see the differences. How is Oregon State different than some other Pac-12 schools like Oregon, Washington State, or others that you looked at?
Yeah, it's different because no matter what, you can always, the family atmosphere is always there. With some other programs, you can see it's like kind of like a cool kid program, and like there's own little groups, and the whole team isn't tight as a whole, and there's locker room problems, and if you lose, then you know, everyone's not friends or mad at each other. And Oregon State was just kind of different. You know, I could tell the whole team bonded pretty well, and, you know, they just got along together, and I fit in good with the players and coaches.
What did you see this year on the field that made you hopeful that Oregon State can compete immediately?
Definitely the last two games that they played versus Arizona and Oregon, ending the season well and finally winning that Civil War. And the new freshman quarterback, and, you know, just their offense seems like they just need a couple more pieces, and they'll be in there rolling, and they have a great defense too, Xavier Crawford and a bunch of people. So I feel like I go in there and just make an impact and help them start winning.
You could project yourself and see yourself in that offense, couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
We're talking Isaiah Hodgins, Beavers wide receiver. We call you a signee now, or what do we call you?
Yeah, you can call me just a Beaver football player now. So within a couple of weeks, I'll be there on campus. So, yeah.
How important is that for you to get there early?
It's huge and important to me because you definitely get a head start on everything than any other freshman in the nation usually would. You get to participate in spring ball, and you get to get used to college and taking classes and workouts and everything. You get close with the team, and I know the offense better. I'll be bigger and stronger and faster by the time spring ball and summer ball comes. So I feel like it's a huge jump for me, and it's going to help me take my game to the next level.
There are a lot of other players that Oregon State remains chasing, the high school players in particular. What do you say to those guys? How can you help Gary Anderson and his program recruit other players?
There's some big ones that are out there, and I just tell them, about the family atmosphere. I tell them why I chose Oregon State and why I think they should. And, I just try to give them straight facts. I don't try to sway the decision too much, but I just try to tell them the good things about Oregon State and where they should be going, in my opinion, because, I think that Oregon State's the best college out there.
Gary Anderson, we've had him as an interview. He's tough. He's fair. He's honest. I can see what he's building, but I've not been recruited by him. You get a little different side of him. What's Coach Anderson like as he's recruiting you?
He's a straightforward dude. He kind of keeps a straight face for the most part. He cracked a couple smiles, every once in a while. He was at my house, and I got to see a little bit of the emotions come out of him. But he's definitely a good guy, and you could tell he's a great coach, and he loves his players and cares for them on a personal level. And he's definitely a coach that I want to have a good future with.
What'd your mom think of his pitch?
My mom likes him. My mom loves all the coaches. That's why she was really high on Oregon State. So, yeah, she thinks they're going to push me good and get me ready.
I think, too, that, you see Brett Brennan, the wide receivers coach, who was obviously involved in your recruitment. He leaves the program for the head coaching job at San Jose State. Did that make you blink at all, or did you just think, hey, that's part of the business?
I knew that was part of the business, and I knew Coach Brennan's family a little bit on a personal level, so I was happy for him and his wife and his kids and everything, and I know that that was a big jump for him, and he couldn't pass down that opportunity. And I know that whoever Oregon State brings in for the next wide receiver coach, they'll be a good, talented coach, and I look forward to building a tight bond with him.
You said you decommitted from Washington State. How did they take that?
At first, they didn't take it real good. Some of the coaches were happy. Some of them were kind of mad at me, as you would expect, and stuff like that. So, they still recruited me, but, some of the ones that recruited me before stopped. But, it's a business, and that's what happens.
And you choose Oregon State over Oregon, and I know a lot of Duck fans want to know what happened with Oregon. Obviously, that coaching staff is gone, but did they just not do a good job of getting on you early?
I kind of knew that's how Oregon was. Oregon State has kind of been there the whole time, and Oregon kind of waited a while. And at first that kind of got to me, and I guess you could say it was a factor. But, at the end of the day, I didn't choose Oregon State over Oregon just because they came too late. It was just I was more comfortable at Oregon State.
You're going to be a Beaver, and when you went to campus there, which game did you see? Did you see a home game?
Yeah, I was at the game where they beat Cal in overtime.
That atmosphere, when you looked around the stadium, the stadium wasn't full. It was by the end of the year. That Civil War game was a sellout. How important is it to Isaiah Hodgins to have that stadium full on Saturdays next season?
It's very important because I feel like if you can get all the fans and students out there to come support, then it just builds more momentum and you make a good play and everyone's going crazy and your heart starts pumping a little bit more, and I feel like it could get the team really rolling because when all the fans were there, like games in Arizona and University of Oregon, they won those games and they had the momentum and they had the fans on their side. So I feel like that is important.
Isaiah, I want to wish you congratulations because I think there's a big pivot point in your life. But what about school? You talked about mom. What happens in school? What will you study? What are you interested in besides football?
My main major that I'm interested in is communications and psychology. So one of those two, I'm going to take a class of each and see which one I like more.
You're going to be a radio host is what you're going to be with that blend.
Yeah, maybe.
I could tell because you're a talker. And, you know, and we'd love what we used to do when Jaquizz Rodgers was there. We had Quiz on every week when he was a freshman. So maybe we have the Isaiah moment every week.
Yeah, that sounds good. I would like that.
I don't want to get in the way of your school or your football, but you're too good a talker not to have you on. What else do you do besides psychology and sports and communications? What are you doing when you're not playing football?
If I'm not working out or playing football,
yeah.
Then I'm just, you know, I'm big on family, and I feel like family's a big part of everything. They help me where I am today, and friends. So most of the time I'm either at home with family, spending time with them, or going out with them or doing something, or, you know, just hanging out with some friends at somebody's house, or just, you know, relaxing.
What's the best Christmas present you ever got?
My car last year.
What'd you get?
Honda Sonata.
It's not bad. What color is that?
Black.
It's not bad. Was that a surprise or did you see that coming?
I was hoping it was coming because I just got my license like a month before that, and my parents played it well, and they like parked the car like somewhere else. So when I looked on my blinds Christmas morning, it wasn't there. So I was like, oh, dang, I didn't get it. And like it was like my last present I opened, and it was like a key inside of like a Beats box. And I like ran outside, and it was like around the corner. So you know, they did a good job.
That's got to be on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
All right, Isaiah, congratulations to you and to Oregon State. Big get in getting you there. Now go make plays and have fun.
All right, thank you.
All right, we'll have you back on.
All right, sounds good.
All right, there's Beaver commitment and a signee. Beaver, what do you want to call him? He is a Beaver football player, Isaiah Hodgins. And that's a big get for Gary Anderson. That it was a big day for Oregon State. This was a more important day for Oregon State than Oregon. And this is a day for Oregon State to kind of stand tall and go, hey, Gary Anderson, who had his eyes and had his focus on some guys that he could get to campus early, super important for him to get guys to campus so they could be part of spring football, especially Isaiah, who I would expect is going to come in right away and be able to help Oregon State. He talked about playing time being important. But Gary Anderson not only gets a four-star wide receiver here, but he takes a guy that, you know, might have otherwise ended up at Washington State or Oregon had it not gone right. He's big. He's physical. He's a pass catcher. I've watched his highlights. This is a guy that you can put as a tent pole on your offense and was recruited nationally by a whole bunch of teams, and his tape holds that up. We're efforting some other Oregon State commitments that you're going to hear from, not just on today's show, but in the next couple of days. So if you're a Beaver fan, you're going to want to lock it in here as we've got their quarterback, their big signing JC quarterback that they're bringing in. We have a offensive lineman and a defensive lineman that we want to talk to. I want to know what Gary Anderson was selling behind the scenes. And Gary Anderson will join us tomorrow. But in the bunker today, and last night, I got a call from Gary Anderson. So here I was last night. I was over at the high school gym at about 9 o'clock last night. And the 14-year-old was hitting volleyballs, and I was shagging, okay? So I'm shagging balls in a wide-open gym, and the phone rings, and it's Gary Anderson, Beavers football coach. And I'm out of breath. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? As I'm running after balls, and he's like, where are you? And I go, hey, I'm shagging balls right now. Like, let's get to the point.
Right.
And I can tell Kiki was in the bunker. Like, I could hear other phones ringing.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to imagine that, like, on the night before,
it's like the war room,
commitment day, it's he and all the coaches in the football office probably working the phones, making sure that their guys know that they love them.
Right.
Because that's so much of recruiting, right?
It's huge.
You heard it from Isaiah Hodgins there. It's like he just wanted to know that, hey, they were on me. They were interested in me. They love me.
Yep.
And that's recruiting.
Yeah. You don't want to feel anxious or like, oh, they don't like me. They don't love me anymore. You know,
put yourself
like dating.
Waiting
for a text message.
Except there's
Why
no
isn't
rules.
He texting me?
Except there aren't like there's no like the 24-hour rule.
Right.
In recruiting, I would think like my tact would be get on the guys that I want early, remind them frequently that I'm interested in where they fit with the program. Don't forget mom and dad, because you've got to sell mom and dad on, hey, I'm going to take care of your kid.
Right.
And then as others come, I would not try to act like I'm too worried about others coming in. I know Mississippi State stole a defensive back from Oregon State that Oregon State really thought until yesterday it had a shot at. The other DB went to another SEC school. So Oregon State lost two defensive backs to SEC programs. But if you're a Beaver fan, correct me if I'm wrong, you're losing to SEC programs now. You're not losing to Boise State here.
Right.
In a recruiting battle. That is a change, because Mike Riley would lose a guy, oh, he chose Boise State over Oregon State, and I'd go, oh, really? Hey, if you're losing to Mississippi State or Kentucky or LSU or Alabama, you're in battles, and I like that. We'll take your phone calls here. Mark wants to weigh in on Isaiah. What's up, Mark?
Hey, John, I've just listened to the interview with Isaiah, and I haven't seen his highlight films yet, but if he's, the size you say he is, I think that's, a great, great pickup for the Beavers. And the one thing I keep thinking in the back of my mind is you mentioned that you're shagging volleyballs with your
yeah.
daughter, and Gary Anderson calls up, just like a friend calls up and says, hey, how's it going? What's
yeah.
going on?
Yep.
And it's like, Helfrich would never do that.
Amen.
That's the difference between old Oregon and Oregon State. And I hope and pray that Willie Taggart does the same thing. He calls you up at, in 9 o'clock at night and goes like, hey, what's going on? Hey, just shoot the breeze or whatever. I mean, I think that just is the difference between Oregon State trending upward and Oregon was trending downward. And now that Taggart's there, I mean, I'm a State of Oregon fan. I'm not a Beaver fan. I went to Oregon State. I'm not just a Duck fan, but I want both teams to be competitive, to be successful. I mean, I want basically the way it was in 2000 and in the late 2000s when Jaquizz and James were there and they were fighting for the Rose Bowl like 2 or 3 years in a row. I mean, that is, that's State of Oregon football.
Yeah, that beats 4-9 and 4-9 and going nowhere. And I love that. And Mark, you hit it on the head. Gary Anderson's not calling me because he loves me. He's calling me because he knows I'm in a position like some other media members around the country in markets that, I know what's going on. He asked me, too, the other day. He called me on the day that Willie Taggart did his news conference. He said, how do you do? And I said, he did well. I said, he did really well. He had a lot of personality. I'm hopeful, too. See, what alarmed me about Mark Helfrich is he didn't want to connect with anybody. It wasn't me. It wasn't you. It was just not in his personality to be warm and engaging. Gary Anderson's got some warmth and engagement to him. And by the way, when Gary Anderson heard that I was shagging balls for the 14-year-old, the first thing he said is, your stock is rising. Canzano, your stock is rising. Look at you. What a good dad you are. And then he said, I'm going to let you go.
Oh, wow.
Go shag balls.
Go have that time.
Little did he know that he was saving me. If
you're
I could
like,
just
no,
go shag
no,
balls.
No, no,
let's
answer,
talk.
Let me answer.
This
a
is a good time.
Questions.
This is a good time. No, but he said, go. He said, just, hit me tomorrow. And because I could hear phones ringing in the background,
sure.
too. Like they're in the call center, the telethon or something.
Jerry Lewis.
But that's a big get for Oregon State. But
it's awesome.
What was it like behind the scenes? Well, guess what? Gary Anderson opened the doors, and he let Andrew Nemec, the recruiting expert for the Oregonian, be in the bunker this morning. Nemec joins us next.
John Canzano, BFT. This is 750 and 102.9 The Game.
You're looking for a vehicle out there today or this weekend or any other time, go see my friends at Gresham Ford. I bought 2 Ford Explorers from Gresham Ford, and I couldn't be happier. What do you do when you go to buy a car? What do? You go on your own personal experience, or you call a friend or family member who's had a transaction recently, and you say, hey, what did you do? Well, I'm here to tell you that Gresham Ford is that kind of place. Bess Wills, her son Preston, they're not only big BFT listeners, they are solid business people. And when you have a transaction with them, you know you're going to get a good handshake, you're going to get a fair transaction, you're going to get a fantastic vehicle, and that's what it should be about. You know what you're going to do? You're going to do what I do. You're going to rave about them afterward. Gresham Ford, GreshamFord.com. Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian, He went behind closed doors, deep into the bunker with Oregon State football today. This was the early signing period. What do we call this thing? Is it an early signing period?
The mid-year junior college transfer signing period.
Brother. A lot of fancy talk for something going on here right before Christmas. Can we explain, like, a guy like Isaiah Hodgins, who we just had on, why does he sign early? What is the advantage to a kid like that getting there early?
Well, he's signing a non-binding financial aid agreement, but that option is only available to players who plan on arriving on campus early. Isaiah Hodgins is expected to move to Corvallis either January 3rd or January 4th, start working out, start eating right, start doing all those things. Obviously, he'll be there for spring ball. The benefit for him is he locks in his scholarship with Oregon State. Oregon State can't pull his scholarship away. He's the only one that could back out of it at this point. And an extremely talented player. Oregon State getting him early is great. Not only is he locked in, but he's a four-star prospect that picked the Beavers over the Ducks and Nebraska and a host of others. They fought, you know, as Gary Anderson likes to say, we want to be in big boy fights. And they just won a big boy fight for Isaiah Hodgins.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian went behind Beaver Nation lines today. What was that experience like for you?
It was really interesting. I was in Coach Brennan's old office, which was kind of depressing. It was a little empty. There wasn't a lot going on in there. But you could see coaches, you know, talking on the phone and how are we doing? We're feeling like we're pretty good. And then, you know, how many more guys are we waiting on? I think one or two. All right. And then you'd see them get on the phone and walk away and start talking on the phone. There's a lot of anxiety because, again, you know, we talk all the time about me having to call and wait on 16, 17, 18-year-old kids and what they decide. These coaches' jobs are on the line with 16, 17, 18-year-old kids and obviously today 19 and 20-year-old kids. And it's paperwork. And it's about signing something and getting it in, and it can be stressful. So today is a lot of paperwork and a lot of anxiety. Did all the months we put in come down to making sure that paper gets sent the right way and gets to the right people? And things are even more complicated at Oregon State because they have the football complex is under construction, and they have to process all the paperwork at Gill Coliseum. So they're going back and forth between the buildings. It was an interesting experience, certainly.
By the way, I've got to break in a little breaking news on the Oregon Ducks front. Colorado defensive coordinator Jim Leavitt is leaving Colorado for the Oregon Ducks, where he'll become the Ducks' new defensive coordinator. Andrew, let me ask you about a move like that, because you've got Brennan leaving Oregon State. You've got a Colorado coordinator leaving. How much does that shake up the recruiting world when you have that kind of staff change?
Well, especially in conference, it can be a big change. When you're taking somebody all the way from Florida, we've seen with Coach Taggart, he's able to get in with some of these Florida guys, and Oregon may suddenly get some Florida guys. Now it's even less of a move. Colorado recruits a lot in California. Leavitt's a big recruiter in that area. He could potentially bring and flip a couple guys from Colorado, and Colorado, frankly, has had their best recruiting class in several years. I think the last time I checked it, they had more four-star commits this year than they've had in the past 3 or 4 years combined. So there's some potential there for now Oregon to battle in conference for some Pac-12 talent.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian. How else did Oregon State do today?
They did well. I think, and this sounds funny, that they set themselves up so well that even today, which was kind of, I guess you could say, the worst-case scenario, they only have 5 signatures today, which was kind of the bottom they expected, it's still really good. They signed the number 4 pro-style junior college quarterback in the country, Jake Luton. He's a 6'6", 220-pound quarterback. He is going to change the offense a little bit. I talked to Gary Anderson today. They're going to try to stretch the field a little more and throw in some new wrinkles if he wins the starting job. If he doesn't win the starting job, they'll have a couple things different. But if Jake Luton wins the starting job, they're going to throw the ball downfield a little bit and suddenly try to spread teams out horizontally and vertically. Should give more space for Ryan Nall inside, and also should create more big plays down the field. So Jake's a big one. They added a big piece in junior college defensive tackle Craig Evans, the number 5 defensive tackle in the country, 6'3", 305 pounds. There were SEC schools after him. Gary recruited him to Wisconsin, and one of the real frustrations for Coach Anderson was not being able to get guys like Craig Evans into Wisconsin. Obviously, people know about him leaving and being frustrated, So he's been around since then. That's how long Gary Anderson has known Craig Evans. He finally signed today. He made a video and said something along the lines of, take it easy, Coach A, I'm finally in. And Gary Anderson said, you know, I probably hounded that kid, you know, too much to the point that he said, Coach, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm in. Don't worry. Don't worry. I'm coming to Oregon State. So to have that one in the books is a huge relief because defensive tackle, frankly, is a huge area of need. It's really hard to recruit on the West Coast. Those are often Southern kids. So to get Craig Evans, a plug-and-play starter at defensive tackle, just a massive get and a must get, frankly, for the Beavers.
Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian with us on recruiting. Why wasn't Oregon more active today?
They didn't go after a ton of junior college talents, and maybe that's – you can make the argument they should have. I mean, you look at that defense and say, man, they're not really where they need to be, and they might need to inject some immediate talent into that group. Certainly you could make that argument. But with the coaching turnover, a quicker deadline, you know, Taggart didn't have a huge chance to recruit a lot of JC guys. There wasn't a big window there. And not that it passed them by, but they decided to go the prep route. And Oregon tends to do that anyway. But you could certainly make the argument Oregon probably should have been a little more active with the JC kids given their desperate need on defense.
Is that a Willie Taggart decision when he walks in the door that he says, hey, I'm getting here too late. I'm too far behind on the JC guys. And I'm not going to be expected, by the way, to chase a bunch of these guys because I've got some time here. Then does he just focus on high school kids because of that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a chance to ask him that directly, but I imagine that weighed in. Like, hey, signing day for these JC kids is a week away from the day I'm hired. I'm not going to try to get in some fights, especially for guys that would play right away in a Pac-12 setting and be ready to go. You're talking about the upper echelon of the JC kids. I think it was just too much ground to make up. At least this way, he's got, you know, 2-3 months to get in. I guess it's like, geez, it's less than 2 months now even. But from when he was hired, it was about 2 months that he has to battle for high school kids versus, again, condensing that down to a week. It just makes it tough.
When you're in there and you're seeing the coaches work and you're seeing it behind the scenes, take us there. You know, how much, like, you mentioned the anxiety. I mean, are there really that many guys who are up in the air at that point this morning?
I don't think it's quite like that. I guess it's kind of like maybe when you're a kid on Christmas morning and you felt like you've been good. You know Santa's coming probably, but still you need to wake up and see the present under the tree or however that shakes out for you. I think that's kind of what it's like. I mean, they felt really good, it seemed like. They seemed comfortable, and yet at the same time, there was a lot of anxiety about let's get all this paperwork in and announce these kids. And, you know, there was a lot of chatter, you know, that different coaches in different groups talking about what they've got and what they're looking like next year. And they're getting ready. I think they're very excited about what they're bringing in. I think they secured with some beef and some key spots. And I think desperately needing a quarterback to control the ball deep. And they got Jake Luton. And I keep going back to that. He played in a high school offense that was a running style offense. Goes to Ventura College that throws the ball. Nobody'd ever really seen him before. By the end of the year, he was the number 4 JC kid in the country, and everybody's knocking on his door. And he says, you know, hey, coach, I want to play in the Northwest. So very comfortable with Jake Luton, very comfortable with Justin Saddlemeyer. Isaiah Hodgins was so antsy to get his paperwork in that he actually sent it in 5 or 6 days early and just said, I just want this out of my hands. I want you guys to have this. So the only real question today was probably Craig Evans. Xavier Davis, a 3-star defensive end outside linebacker, ended up signing with Kansas State. That happened after I left Corvallis because I was trying to race home to get away from the weather. So I didn't see the anxiety of that. But you've got a lot of coaches kind of standing around waiting, making the final calls. And Gary is such an active recruiter that he was pretty much holding his office with the door shut, making sure he was getting everybody he could right at the last minute, making sure all the paperwork was in, talking to mom, comforting dad, that kind of thing. Like I said, a lot of waiting and a lot of talking about, hey, we got some key pieces and let's get ready to go.
What's left in the high school area for Oregon State? What do they need to be focused on now moving towards February's signing deadline?
Well, the biggest one is in-state linebacker Daniel Green. He's the number 1 linebacker, middle linebacker on the West Coast. I think Oregon State's in a good position. They had an in-home visit that went really well. Daniel Green has a lot of offers. He just decommitted from USC. Again, when you're the number 1 middle linebacker on the West Coast, you've got a lot of coaches coming to your door. Oregon's going to try to get in on him. Kansas State's in the mix. That's going to be a big key, is adding quality pieces there. Jameer Calvin cut his list. He's a U.S. Army All-American wide receiver. He cut his list to 4, and I think he even might argue it's a premature at this point. I think Oregon State's very much still in the mix there. Do I think they're the favorite right now? No, but I'd probably put him in the 2 or 3 spot, and very comfortably in that spot, considering 2 of his teammates right now, high school teammates, are committed to Oregon State. I think he was a little premature cutting his list to 4, and I think if I asked him today, he'd say 5. Sounds like Oregon State's back in the mix for him.
All right, touching back on the hiring, again, the breaking news, Colorado defensive coordinator Jim Leavitt leaving Colorado for Oregon. Interesting that he was at University of South Florida before Willie Taggart. That's an interesting connection there. What do you know about him as a recruiter specifically?
To be completely honest with you, I don't know much. I know that, again, Colorado this year specifically made major strides, and that was even before winning games that they did. That was this summer. They'd already this summer in this class had 3-4 four-star commits, which was more than they had in the last 3 or 4 years combined.
Very, very interesting there. And, you know, it's funny, though, that here's a guy who got fired at South Florida. Taggart takes over. Taggart hires him. Must have liked something he saw.
Yeah, he liked him. I wonder if he thought, hey, quick trigger on that guy. We got to bring him in somehow into the fold if I ever get in a position to get him.
All right, good job, and we'll look for you on Oregon Live.
Sounds good, thank you.
All right, Andrew Nemec of the Oregonian breaking it down from behind company lines at Oregon State. Colorado had a remarkable defensive turnaround. They, you know, if you go back and you look at kind of what happened to them, you know, under Jim Leavitt, they ranked first in the Pac-12 in total defense. And you know, here's a guy in college football. And, you know, as his time, not just as a player, he was a safety as a player. But, you know, this guy went to the University of Missouri. He started his college coaching career at Missouri. He was at Iowa. He was at Kansas State. He was with the 49ers for 3 years as a linebackers coach. Then, after getting fired at South Florida, he took a couple years off. And now he ends up back. He's at Colorado for a year. Then Oregon. And this guy had a decent head coaching. He was 95-57 as a head coach. And, you know, he did interesting, too, because he was the first coach for South Florida. When you know, this is brand new. So when his very first recruiting class in 1996, he redshirted everybody. The whole team redshirted. And he built him up 4 seasons and then, you know, found some success. And then before the end of time, the University of South Florida found that he not only had lost games, but he apparently struck a player in the locker room during halftime of a Louisville game. And that's a question.
Mm-hmm.
He says he was trying to console the player and never struck him. But school officials said that he was not truthful about what happened. And basically he had gone around and told players to change their story. Your story on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. Skip Holtz was hired after him, and then Willie Taggart. So Jim Harbaugh hired him with the Niners.
Okay.
So he's linebackers coach with Jim Harbaugh.
Well, he's a fiery guy.
There's your connection.
Nose picker.
If you're looking for a connection, Leavitt was Jim Harbaugh's linebackers coach for the 2011 season. So
okay.
But he was let go when Harbaugh went from the Niners to Michigan. So weigh in on that. Does that get your juices going? 417-7575. We're going to get Jake Luton on the show tomorrow, the Beavers' commitment at quarterback. We love to get these guys on. I want to talk about them, about what their decisions were. I saw Luton at the Civil War. He was on the sideline. He was watching the Civil War game. He's got quarterback written all over him. Big, tall guy sticks out like a sore thumb on that sideline. He was 6'6".
Ooh.
And he had a baseball cap on backwards on his recruiting trip. And I thought, this guy's all business.
Yeah, he's ready.
He's ready to go play some football.
Yeah.
So we'll get Jake Luton on tomorrow, the junior college quarterback that Oregon State is bringing in. We'll talk more about Jim Leavitt coming up. Plus, also, Kiki's going to read some news with us. First Call Heating and Cooling, make them your first call when it comes to heating, especially this time of year. Look at today. Look how cold it is. There's snow in the air. And if you're out driving around, you know what I'm talking about. And if you're home, look outside. There's snow out there. You just shouldn't know it in your house. Like us, our house is warm and comfortable and inviting. And we have First Call Heating and Cooling to thank for that. You can go online and go to firstcallheat.com, or you can call them at 503-231-3311. That's 231-3311. I just have a good feeling when I think about First Call Heating and Cooling. I was taking the 14-year-old to school this morning. I was driving. We saw the First Call Heating and Cooling guys out on the road getting it going early, out on service calls. And she said, hey, that's our heating company. And I said, that's right. That's First Call Heating and Cooling. FirstCallHeat.com.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay, here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
Well, what do you think of the hire? Oregon hiring its defensive coordinator, a guy who had the 17th ranked defense this year and improved a defense that was 120th 2 years ago. Is this a great hire? Is this a good hire? Is the jury still out? Jim Leavitt was at the University of South Florida as a head coach at one time. He left there under conditions and circumstances that he's probably not proud about. He allegedly headbutted a player in the locker room or struck a player, and then the university found that he was not truthful about it at South Florida. He has resurrected himself by going to the NFL with Jim Harbaugh as a linebackers coach, has a great reputation since then. Is this a case of a defensive-minded guy who maybe lost his cool one time in the locker room, becoming palatable defensive coordinator for your program, or is it cause for concern? You tell me at 417-7575. Jackson Palo Alto, he will join this discussion. Jack, what's up?
Well, I think it's a good hire. It's not a great hire. I think the instance at South Florida is alarming because, you know, that's not okay to do to kids of any age, especially college kids, you know, after you lose, too. So, you know, a coach has to take him on, himself first and foremost. That's all I got, John. Thanks for having me on.
So the player that he allegedly struck in 2010, 7 years ago, is now a 26-year-old kid that has grown up now, and his name is Joel Miller. There was an interesting story written by CBS Sports about Joel Miller. Leavitt got hired back into college football as a defensive coordinator. And at the same time, by the way, Leavitt was fired in 2010. The school said not only for striking Miller, but for interfering with the investigation. His reputation as one of the best defensive minds in football was really in doubt at that point, and a lot of people thought he'll never coach at the college level again. He gets back to Colorado, and because he's good at what he does, he has been a winner. And apparently what happened in 2010, according to the report I'm reading, is he grabbed Miller by the throat and he struck him twice at halftime of a game against Louisville. And Miller, I would love to get Miller on the show, because that is a guy who I think you'd look at Miller. Miller, by the way, has started a clothing company, and multiple witnesses corroborated the account that Miller had, that he was struck and he was grabbed. And, you know, I have questions about it. I don't want to judge a guy on one incident, but I have questions about it. I know how that is. I know how that is in a heated situation. I know how coaches are. I covered Bob Knight. I know what a guy paints outside the lines, how bad it looks. But I want to be fair to Leavitt. I want to be fair to the player as well. But is this like Rutgers basketball coach Mike Rice? Is it like Is it like Bob Knight? I don't know. But Mike McIntyre and Jim Harbaugh apparently believe in this guy. And say what you will about Jim Harbaugh, he's an intense guy too. So the Leavitt thing, how much of a concern should that be for Oregon? And what's the look, you know, because I know that Oregon's going to take a little bit of a beating over this.
Yeah, and I think they should, to a certain degree. Hopefully that was a one-and-done situation. My trouble with that is if you're going to take a misstep, I would prefer that it would be a misstep that did not involve any sort of harming of a player, that kind of thing, any sort of violence. But again, I don't know. I'm on the fence on this. As a parent, if I had a kid that was going to play for him, I might be a little bit concerned about that. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. I don't know. I hate to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right, but that's tough.
I want to be fair to him because everybody else says he's a heck of a guy. He's a great guy. He's a great defensive mind. I know that some of these defensive guys can get nuts.
Like, sure.
That's who you have to be as a defensive coach. And you've seen coaches, even Mike McIntyre on the sideline of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
He's yelling and screaming. And I've covered coaches who are yellers and screamers, and it doesn't make them all abusive.
Right.
But I've seen guys snap when things aren't going right and the pressure gets to him and a guy's mouthing off to him. I've seen coaches snap. And so the problem I have with this whole thing, the bigger issue is that you've seen guys snap, but that he went afterwards and told players to change their story and he lied to the university. He wanted to keep his job.
Yeah, I think the best thing to do in that situation is just fall on the sword, because the cover up sometimes is far worse than the actual crime. So you need to be careful with that as well.
He sued the University of South Florida after he left. He got $2.75 million in the settlement.
Mm-hmm.
For wrongful termination is what he sued him for. Miller, by the way, told officials 5 years ago, quote, "Coach Leavitt didn't touch me in any malicious way." He later told CBS Sports, quote, "I was young and vulnerable. Leavitt told me he could take everything away if he wanted to, and he had the power to take everything away." In the school's investigation, Leavitt allegedly told Miller, quote, "Choose your words wisely. I'm the most powerful person in the building," end quote.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, cover up worse than the crime, and Paul Miller, who was the player struck, Joel Miller is the player who was struck, is sitting around going, "Well, why does that guy get another chance?" That's a question. So Leavitt apparently to be Oregon's new defensive coordinator. It's a statement hire. It says we're going after a great defensive mind. They're giving him a big number. That's a 4-year contract, and it is a answer to the question. And people thought, did they go on the cheap when they got Willie Taggart? Because, you know, did they get a guy that, you know, the fifth or sixth highest paid coach in the conference? Oregon could have spent more money there. Could they have gotten a more established coach? I think what they're saying is we're going to recruit Florida. We like Willie Taggart. We love him. He's energetic. He's outgoing. He's going to be the new face of the program. And by the way, Leavitt has a reputation of being kind of a hard ass. And we're going to put that offense at South Florida with Leavitt's defense. If you're a Duck fan, I think you're probably excited about it. But I also think you're going to have to do some explaining to people who go, "Well, what about that kid that he allegedly punched and then lied about it?"
Well, you just have to hope that he learned and, you know, that's in his rear view.
Do we give second chances like this? Is that a second chance that's worth giving? Because there are some things guys would do or people would do and you'd go, "No second chance."
Yeah.
Sex assault. That's no second chance.
No second chance. I think hitting a kid is right there. I mean, it's, but again, I wasn't there. I like the idea of having second chances. You know, we all fall down. You know, we all skin our knees doing something. There's always something that we go, "Gosh, I wish I had done that differently." So let's just hope moving forward that this isn't something that's going to pop up again.
Let's take your phone calls at 417-7575. How much does that bother you if you're a Duck fan? What is the statement that Oregon's making? You tell me. And do you like the hire? Ultimately, is Leavitt to Oregon a hire that gets you excited? And I think from a football standpoint, people are going to say this is a great hire. That they not only got a great defensive coordinator and a guy who's had success, a lot of success, on the defensive side of the ball, but they stole somebody from an in-conference, you know, an in-conference opponent. So they're stealing a bright mind from an in-conference opponent. I mean, that's a double value if you're Oregon. And Colorado, make no mistake, played great defense this year. And Leavitt took what was the 120th ranked defense at Colorado when he came in, and he made him a top 20 defense. So I think from that standpoint, you love it. The other stuff, I think you kind of go, oh, I hope he's not that guy. Jared's in Beaverton. Go ahead, Jared.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Good afternoon. Happy snow day to you. I was just going to mention, you know, I'm kind of like you. I have some questions, like what was all the circumstances? What was the situation? Because being in the military, I've seen guys talk. It happens. You guys lose their cool sometimes, and it happens. I think, like you said, though, from a football standpoint, I'm not a Duck fan, and I'm scared because, obviously, Oregon's going to have a prolific defense now if all goes well.
He's going to need players, but, yeah, he's a great defensive mind. I don't know if he can coach that defense that they had this year, but can he recruit? And given that he comes from the Jim Harbaugh line of thinking, like Jim Harbaugh hired him when no one else would touch Jim Leavitt. Here was Jim Harbaugh hiring him to be the 49ers linebackers coach. Like they said he'd never work in college football again. Well, then Mike McIntyre, Colorado, took him. Then now Oregon makes him the defensive coordinator. John's on I-5. What's up, John?
Hey, first time caller, long time listener. Love the show.
Thanks.
Love John. Love where it's gone.
Thank you.
Quick road update. The roads are dicey.
Where are you?
And white knuckle driving. Canzano's getting me home.
Where are you right now?
Just past the rest area south of Salem. Going about 35 miles an hour. Not good.
Is it getting worse or better as you travel?
Way worse. I left Portland about an hour ago.
Okay. Go easy. Don't be in a hurry.
Absolutely. Hey, love all the things the Ducks are doing. Can't have a guy that assaulted a player. Doesn't fly in this day and age.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It's going to be a problem.
I think people are going to have a real problem with it. John, I don't think you're alone. 417-7575. I want to hear from Leavitt. We got to get him on the show. I want to hear what happened. I want the player on the show. I think everybody needs to hear that. Because I think if you're making this hire, if you're Willie Taggart, that's something you also needed to do. I'm hoping Willie Taggart did his diligence and just didn't hire the guy because he's a good football coach. Dustin's in Beaverton. Dustin, what do you got?
Hey, John, really a first-time caller and really love your show. And, I'm also just sitting in the snow right now trying to get home and just kind of wanted to weigh in on some of the things you're talking about. I think Oregon is doing some great things right now with the program and just trying to move it into a positive direction. And I really like the hire and Taggart. And I'm a Beavers fan, and I really like the energy that guy brings to the team. So I think that his outlook on things right now, that he wouldn't bring somebody in personally, I think, that with his energy and attitude, that I think that he's bringing in people that are going to kind of fire these kids up and really turn their heads around and make them motivated to know the potential they truly have. And while we can all try and think negatively about Lafayette, we also have to remember we've all made mistakes before and probably lost it in situations where we didn't deserve a second.
I lose it every day. I lose it every day, Dustin. Here's my thing, because I said earlier, does he get a second chance? Okay? I said that. South Florida in 2010, he strikes a player. He lies about it. He tries to bully players into not saying the truth. They fire him. He sits for 2 years. Jim Harbaugh makes him a linebackers coach. Was that the second chance? Maybe. Then Colorado, Mike McIntyre makes him the defensive coordinator. Was that the second chance? Now Oregon comes along. Is this really the second chance for Jim Leavitt? Or has enough time passed where you say, look, he did the right thing at Colorado. He did the right thing with the Niners. He sat. He paid a penance. He thought he was never getting back into coaching. I'm asking, where was the second chance, or is this it? That's my question. Ken is in Eugene. 417-7575. Ken, what do you got?
Hey, John. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
You know, give the guy a second chance. I mean, we need to. If we don't, it's pretty hypocritical. You look at kind of the society we're in and different things, and you have people who are still out there buying Adrian Peterson uniforms and hoping he comes back for fall and things like that. And I mean, that's, for me, that's far more reprehensible and horrible than anything that was done here. I mean, not saying that he gets a pass, but I mean, it's been 7 years. I think, you know, we need to move on. And if that becomes an issue, that's pretty immature on our behalf. I mean, we would expect and hope to get second chances when we make mistakes, and not saying it's the only mistake the guy's ever made in his life. I think he's a great coach. Do you look over at Holy? No. But at the same time, do you have to hold that up there? I mean, Mike McIntyre, he took a flyer on the guy for 2 years. I mean, is his word good enough? I mean, he was at a did a good job there, did good in the pros. I mean, can you ever forget the moment? Does it ever go away? No, but we can move beyond it and, you know, be mature enough to let the guy get past a mistake and, you know, let him move on and hopefully do good things for the defense here at Oregon. That's what I think. So
the terms of the deal will make Jim Leavitt the highest paid defensive coordinator in Pac-12 history. And in fact, the highest paid coordinator on either side of the ball in the history of the conference. So Oregon throwing a lot of money at Jim Leavitt to flip from Colorado to Oregon.
You know what I think is interesting? I think last week I talked to quite a few Beaver fans who were really conflicted because they really like Willie Taggart. I think right now they're going, there they did. Now I can hate him again. They've got this guy.
Gave
this guy's
the ammo
a bad
they
guy.
Needed. Yeah.
Exactly. Now they have another bullet in the chamber. And I think Beaver fans that were kind of on the fence are not going to be right back where they were 3 weeks ago on their feelings on the Ducks.
417-7575, weigh in on that. I'm willing to give him a chance. I started thinking second chance, right? And then I went, well, wait a minute, he coached in Colorado, and did anything happen there? Okay, no. Second chance there. Coached with the Niners, anything happened there? No. He sat for 2 years. Anything happened there? No. He just looked contrite and looked like he was never going to get back into college football. If I'm giving Jim Leavitt a sentence at South Florida, and I'm the czar of the NCAA, and you're the head coach at South Florida, and you strike a player, and then you cover it up, you get fired, you sit out for 2 years, you spend the next 2+ years trying to get back into college football, then you get back in, and you're well-behaved. Is that time served?
Well, let's think about this. Your kid plays volleyball.
Yeah.
If a coach did anything like that,
14 though versus,
I know, but still,
19.
It doesn't matter. It's still,
I do think that matters. I think there's a distinction. If a coach hits a 14-year-old girl,
well, yeah,
versus a college football coach striking,
yes,
a 20-year-old player who's in uniform at halftime in the heat of the moment.
Yes, I realize that's apples to oranges, but I'm just trying to draw a parallel in terms of, you know, people saying it's okay to give him a second chance. But what if that was your kid that got hit?
Well, let's find that out. Let's get him on the show. Let's get dad on the show or the kid on the show. Gliss is over there looking stressed, but he'll get it done.
He'll get it.
Look, if you tune into tomorrow's show, I bet you we have him on the show.
Gliss
that's
is a magic man.
That's how he
He's
works.
He's a magician.
That's how he works. He won't sleep. Charles is in Malala. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, so thanks for taking my call, John. My thing is, the most concerning part of it is definitely the trying to cover it up.
Yeah.
But the reality is that, you know, you're dealing with, like, as a parent, you know, we get frustrated and we hold our own kids to certain standards. And, I mean, when you're in a coaching position and you're responsible for so many kids, and if they start acting up and you're in a locker room, things can happen. I'm not giving them an excuse or a card to walk away. I'm just saying that when you are in that role and you are, you know, kind of over so many kids, and you expect so much out of them, you know, things can happen. And like I said, in my opinion, the longtime Oregon Ducks fan, the most concerning thing to me is the cover-up.
Appreciate the call, Charles and Malala. Let's go to Mike, who's in the damn snow. Mike, what's up?
So, man, first of all, man, you know, ever since we've been born, all our lives, we've heard that good guys finish last. Now, if you guys want to be a good guy, you're not going to win no games. You got a bunch of good guys down there on the Trailblazers. They ain't been winning no games. You got to, you know, when college players come to college to play sports, there's two types. There's the type that their mamas took them to the games. Their mothers are the ones that introduced them to sports. And when they get into the pros, they're Southies. And then there's the kind of player that fathers took them to the games and gave them the introduction. The Rasheed Wallaces, these kind of guys. You know, you're not going to win anything with mama's boys. You got to have daddy's boys out there. Like that guy said the other day, you got to have some dogs. You know, because it's all about the pedigree.
Well, I agree with that, but I also think some nice guys win. The Spurs are, you know, seen as nice guys. They win a whole bunch of games. I think LeBron is a nice guy. He wins games. Steph Curry high-fived the opposing coach. That's a nice guy there. Tell me how you feel about Jim Levitt, hired Oregon defensive coordinator. They'll make him the highest-paid coordinator in Pac-12 history. Is this a good hire? 417-7575.
More with John Canzano, the bald-faced truth, on 750 and 1029 The Game.
OmniGuard Security, OmniGuardSecurity.com. That's the website. You can go there. You can find out all about their cutting-edge technology and how they can secure your home or your business. I use OmniGuard Security at home, and you know what? I have little kids, right? And the kids are jimmy-jacking around the house. They're opening doors, whatever. If somebody opens a door at my house, I get an alert. I can secure the door. I can unlock the door. I can tell you where the motion in the house is. If you have the camera systems, you can see your house. Somebody steals a package off your doorstep, you've got them. That's what OmniGuard Security does for you. They can give you that security. Not the illusion of security, but real security. Find out all about their features or get a quote, residential or commercial, by going online to OmniGuardSecurity.com or calling them at 503-970-7147. That's 970-7147. That's my security company, so I'll tell you about it. I want to talk about this Jim Levitt thing. Oregon's going to make him their the highest paid coordinator in conference history. Here's the story for those of you just tuning in. Levitt is a really good defensive coordinator. He comes from Oregon, from Colorado to Oregon. He was formerly with the 49ers as the linebacker coach under Jim Harbaugh. And before that, he was unemployed because in 2010, during halftime of a game against Louisville, he was the head coach at the University of South Florida. He struck a player. He choked him. He struck him. And then later lied about it to the university as they were investigating and bullied other players and said, don't report this. So here's my question to you, to the room. Is it enough that he was fired and sat out 2 years and had to work his way back into college football that you feel satisfied that, hey, this is a guy who made a mistake, did something awful and horrible and deeply regrets it? B, do you need to hear that from Jim Levitt before you can move on? Or C, do you not care? Because I had a guy on Twitter who said, hey, I wouldn't have known about this had you not told me about it. Let that guy live his life. And we had a caller who called in just a few minutes ago. And we're going to call Mike from now on. You know what we're going to call Mike? We're going to call Mike, first of all, Mike. This is why. First of all, Mike. Hang on. Little miscommunication there.
Maybe I'll do an impersonation.
That's all right. Go ahead.
First of all.
That's what he starts every call by going first of all. First of all. So anyway, Mike called in earlier and he said, you need dogs. You need bad guys. You need some bad guys to be able to do that. I just don't know if I need that in the coordinator position. TJ's in Tigard. Go ahead, TJ.
Hey, first of all, man. Wouldn't Taggart have to? My first question is, wouldn't Taggart have to get that pass? Wouldn't he have to run that through, you know, the AD and all of that?
I'm gonna guess. You know, I think what we're gonna find out later is that Levitt probably interviewed for the head coaching job, and they interviewed him and decided they couldn't make him the head coach, and they decided to make him a coordinator instead. I'm gonna throw that out there. I don't know that to be true, But I'm telling you, I know that one of the planes that went to interview in New York came out of Boulder, Colorado, and I'm wondering if Jim Levitt was on that plane right now. So, TJ, I'm going to guess it was their idea.
So here's the other thing. We can't then turn to Taggart and say, well, this Taggart's a bad dude because he's just trying to turn this team around. So if he has, he's obviously connected with the Harbaughs, and if Jim Levitt was a linebackers coach for Jim Harbaugh, well, then I understand that connection is full circle. So
yeah.
we can't point the finger at Taggart and say, oh, well, Taggart's a bad dude. He's supporting.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, what's the second chance? Is the second chance come in the NFL? Is the second chance come at Colorado? Are we on a second chance thing here, or has Jim Levitt proved it?
I think he's proved it.
All right, there is. TJ thinks he's proved it. Do you agree with that? 417-7575. All right, remember Mike? Mike called in.
So, man, first of all, man, ever since we've been born, all our lives, we've heard that good guys finish last.
And by the way, what's this we've been born thing? Like we're twins?
Yeah, he's got a mouse in his pocket.
Ever since we've been born. We're going to call him First of All Mike from now on.
First of All Mark. I like it.
Irma's in Gladstone. Irma, what's on your mind?
Well, I wish that I didn't have that in his history, but he's on his second chance. He's got a good record so far. I hope they put something in the clause in his contract. If he was to have a repeat instance, that should be, the death knell.
Yeah, I think that's common sense. I mean, if you hit a kid, you're done. And he got fired at South Florida for it. But my question is, where's the second chance? TJ, the earlier caller, said second chance has been done already. Has the second chance? Let's apply this to dating, okay? Let's not use hitting as a thing there's no second chance there.
Right.
But let's use, like, first date.
Okay.
You're on a first date, Kiki.
Okay.
And you're supposed to be picked up by Jim.
Okay.
Let's say Jim.
All right.
Let's say you met on Tinder.
Oh,
you swipe.
Wow. Okay.
Which way did you swipe?
I don't know. I think it's swipe right.
Swipe right.
Is it swipe left? Right or left?
I don't know.
Let's say swipe right.
Kellen's saying right.
Okay. Thank you, Kellen.
Kellen got a sore arm from swiping right. you swipe right.
All right.
All right. And Jim pops up, and then what happens after that, by the way?
Yeah, I don't know. What happens?
Does it just give you a hotel room number or something?
No.
Floating hearts?
If you swipe right, that means you're down.
Okay.
And if she also swipes right, you get matched.
And then what happens?
Well, then you meet up.
How do you meet up? How do you know where to meet?
You agree to meet. You text.
Text each other.
Conversate over the app.
Mm.
Okay. Like, okay. All right. So I'm going to go meet
Jim.
Shows
you what I know.
Yeah. You're out of the game, man. You're on the bench.
Good thing, too.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah, it can get dark.
It's also very simple.
Well, so Jim, what? Does he stand me up?
I forgot what I was talking about.
I know. I was trying to get you.
Jim is supposed to pick you up.
Uh-huh.
Let's say it's old-fashioned night, and Jim's picking you up, and Jim stands you up.
Ooh.
Or you're supposed to meet him, and he leaves you sitting there.
Okay.
Okay? So Jim calls back and says, I'm really sorry. He gives you some lame excuse.
When does he call me? Like the next day?
He calls you the next day.
Okay.
Do you go back?
Probably not.
You don't give him a second chance?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what the story is or how
apologetic.
What if
he's really good looking?
No. That would be superficial of me, John.
I know.
That would be very superficial. That's why I might do it.
All right. So let's just say then time passes, okay?
Uh-huh.
Let's say you just say, I'm not doing this again. And then one of your friends says to you, hey, did you meet Jim?
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, that guy, he was supposed to go on a date with me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she says, I'm going out with him, okay?
Oh.
Do you say, no, he doesn't deserve a second chance? Or are you so far removed, as Jim Levitt is, from his experience in South Florida? You know, he's thrice removed here. From that experience.
Yeah, I think I just cut the cord entirely and just,
You don't want to be her friend either?
No, that's not what I mean.
All right.
I guess it just depends on the excuse and what happened. But part of this is Jim and Coach need to acknowledge what they did wrong, right? And I think that's what people want to hear. And like I said, I think in the last segment, a lot of times the cover-up is far worse than the crime. So if you come out, You stand before the firing squad for 15 minutes. It's going to be uncomfortable. You address it, and then you move rip on. The Band-Aid off, and you're done.
By the way, on Twitter, Donovan is taking offense at us calling a 19-year-old a kid. I still think a 19-year-old is a kid.
Oh, I think a 19-year-old's a kid.
That's a teenager. That's not a man. That's a kid.
Kids going to college.
Yeah, it's college kids. Yeah.
It's still a kid. I mean, if you want to get all legal and technical, but
yeah,
it's a kid.
Tom's in Portland. Tom, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Well, you know, I'm looking in the Oregonian today, and it says how the big names, Jim Levitt is number one on there, and doesn't say anything about the hitting of the kid. And I don't agree with that because I actually got hit on the head with a clipboard. I was a competitive swimmer, but we got over it, and my coach apologized. But basically, I think
what'd you do? What'd you do to get deserve that?
I was goofing around with another kid while we were having a team meeting in the pool, and the coach picked me and broke his clipboard over my head.
Broke it?
Oh, yeah, that's different.
But
that hurt.
Anyway, it was so long ago. Yeah, it hurt a little bit. I think it hurt my parents a little more. Well, they gave Coach, the 1-2.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess it happens today. You probably own a wing of the school.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Can't cross your eyes at a kid these days.
But I think that, just when I read the paper this morning and read, you know, as the first name that I thought it was a great hire, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. He likes to hire.
So I once...
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
So I was a news producer many, many moons ago, and I once took a script back to one of the editors, and he didn't like the way that I wrote the story and matched up the video.
You broke a clipboard over your head?
No. I walked up to him, and I said, hey, because it wasn't in the system yet. It hadn't been edited, and it hadn't been put into the system.
Yeah.
So I was like, what's going on with this story? So I go back... And the script is still sitting there. He picked up the script, crumpled it in a wad of paper. He threw it in my face, and he said, this is the worst script I've ever read. Now, maybe it was, but that certainly wasn't the best way to handle that.
Yeah.
I don't know. What
does that have anything to do with what we're talking about, or is this?
But he said clipboard in the head. Experience? It totally, well, clearly I'm still upset about it, and it's probably been 15 years, but I'll never forget that.
I think that Jim Levitt's old school, okay? His age, he's in his 60s, okay? Mm-hmm. He's old school, right? This is a hard-nosed old school football player. There was a time when coaches grabbed face masks and hit kids on the head with clipboards. And Jim Levitt's a defensive coach, and he's tough and intense. He's the head coach of South Florida. I could see what happened. Weird things happen in halftime. He's not going to be the only coach in America who's ever done something mm-hmm. like this. Things that people regret sometimes happen at halftime. We'll just leave it at that. I like that South Florida fired him. I think it was the right move. I also believe in second chances, and I think Jim Harbaugh gave him a second chance to be the linebackers coach with the Niners. I wondered if he'd ever get back in college football. Colorado, Mike McIntyre gave him another second chance to get back into college football. He's made good on that. I'm at this point going, I want to hear from Jim Levitt. I want to hear what he has to say about this. But I'm also going, there's got to be more to this guy than him just being a great defensive coach and also being a guy who punched a kid one time.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear the rest of it, and I want to hear from the kid who got punched. I want to hear his side of the story. Does that guy forgive him? If that guy forgives him, then it's a different story to me. Ryan is in Portland. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, JC, how you guys doing? You know, while we're on the stories of, hey, your coach went crazy, I got to share with you mine. Now, I'm a high school football coach right now, and you're exactly right. You cannot coach kids like you once did. Nor do I think I ever want to. Grew up out in East County, played football out in East County. Windy afternoon, and Fletch can attest to the story. He was there on that same field with me. A clipboard was thrown at my feet. Papers flew everywhere. Every which way you can imagine, papers are flying everywhere. I did my best.
Brutal.
To not laugh, and that took everything out of me. And again, kind of like the last call, Coach did come to me right after practice and apologize for it. And say, hey, I'm so sorry. Can't let that happen again. And it never did happen again. For whatever reason, that fuse was just so short. Now,
get him a stapler. You know what I mean? keep those papers together.
That's right.
I want to hear from you at 417-7575. You want to do some news? Whoa, or what do you want to do?
Do you want to take another caller? We can take another caller. People want to talk about this.
All right. Sam is in Portland. Go ahead, Sam.
It's disappointing. I think that if the story's true, and I've just been Googling it while I'm listening to you, the kid sounds like the kid's not doing well, that he suffered from the incident. Levitt, it seems like, denies it. But, you know, I was in sports most of my life, never had a coach hit me. And I don't know that there's a second chance for that. And as far as Coach Taggart, there's so many other D coordinators out there that I just wouldn't hire a guy with this kind of baggage when you're first time at a big five conference school. It's just too much baggage, in my opinion.
I appreciate the call and appreciate that you did some research on that. Jason's in Portland. Go ahead, Jason. What's up?
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So, a quick story. When I was in junior high, I'm old enough to remember that actually there were teachers out there that used to spank a kid when he was bad in class. And so if there was an issue in class where a kid was acting up, maybe your teacher come by and, like, thump your hand with a ruler or whatever. So in science, there was a teacher named Mr. Perlmutter. I'll remember it forever. And the thought was that all the kids were talking about, that this kid is actually a fake kid in class. Like, don't act up because this guy will actually kick you if you are acting up in class. So out of all the classes that I was in when I was in junior high, that was the one class that people sat and paid attention and didn't make a sound out of the fear that maybe somebody would come and reprimand. That actually the teacher would come and do something.
Yeah, accountability. So, yeah, there was accountability.
So my theory is maybe just even the thought of, like, this guy will get honest if we don't pay attention will discipline the team just out of the fear that, this guy doesn't take any crap.
I hope. I think they'll be afraid of him. Yeah, people will be afraid of him. I had a teacher in government class who was in the Korean War, and we had a student in our class who was kind of a jerk, and he reached up and he touched the American flag. My teacher came out of his desk, grabbed the kid around his throat, and pinned him to the wall. And he said, "Don't you ever touch the American flag like that," and was shaking. And you know what? His parents came to school and said, "Don't touch the flag." That's what they said to the kid.
Wow.
And sent him back to class. Like, today, they'd be suing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Stop being so litigious. That's what I'm saying.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stand by for news.
This is Kiki Reads the News on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Get to it.
After many, many years, the 1985 classic Breakfast Club was just added to the Library of Congress's National Film Registry.
About time.
I know, right? Along with 24 other movies. And I just thought I'd name a few of them that were inducted here for 2016. That you have heard of. Obviously, you've got The Birds, Alfred Hitchcock from 1963, Breakfast Club, East of Eden, Funny Girl, 1968 flick, The Lion King from 1994.
Nice.
There's a huge list. It actually, with the addition of 2016's 25 films that were added, there's 700 films. So I actually tweeted out the entire list. As I was scrolling through here, there's some pretty great flicks on here, but I would be interested if people are out there to tweet me to tell me what films they think should be on there. Because there's all genres. That's what's interesting to me about this. You've got Breakfast at Tiffany's, and then you have comedies like Breakfast Club. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Breakfast Club, a comedy?
Well, it's of that.
It's more drama than
that. Yeah, it is. You're right. I'm thinking more like 16 Candles.
I think it is funny.
But it's in that genre of Molly Ringwald and her little Brat Pack or whatever they called them.
Right. That's good. Those are good movies.
Those are great movies.
They stopped making movies after that.
Shawshank's on here.
Make crap now.
Shawshank, Pulp Fiction.
Special effects.
Roger and Me from 1989.
Breakfast Club is a classic.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
I watch Breakfast Club right now and it holds up.
I could go on.
Not many movies do.
You know what really holds on? One of my all-time favorites.
What?
Katharine Hepburn and Sidney Poitier. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
Mm-hmm.
You should watch that today. It's absolutely applies everything that goes on in that movie. Spencer Tracy, great flick.
You like old movies.
I do. You know the other one I love?
What?
On Golden Pond.
You like Katharine Hepburn.
Yes, but four-time.
I tell you, darling.
Four-time Academy Award winner. Yeah. I have to tell a story. So my friend's kids.
You got to be quick about it.
Oh, yeah,
Fletcher's
going to
be mad at you.
No. Real quick. I wanted them to watch On Golden Pond for years. And they didn't want to watch it. Last summer, I finally made them watch it, and I think I got an enthusiastic thumbs up from all the kids on that one.
The kids liked it.
They did.
There you go.
That's all right.
Jim Levitt, is this a second chance for him, a third chance? Is it much ado about nothing? Fletcher Johnson and Chop are coming up. Afternoons with Fletch and Chop. That's next.